From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is On Point. I want to start this hour by saying thank you. Yes, to you on the other side of the radio. Knowing you're there listening and thinking deeply about the conversations this team works so hard to put together, well, that knowledge sustains us, it drives us, and it gives us pride in our work. And I really do mean every word of that. But it was also an exercise in gratitude. Social science researchers say there's ample evidence that gratitude isn't just nice and sweet. It's important for our own mental health, for our success, and even for human progress. So this hour on Point, on this Thanksgiving Eve, the value of gratitude. And you can join us. Do you actively practice feeling and communicating gratitude? Has it changed you? Do you like to see it in others? And why do you think it's important? And as we get ready for tomorrow's Thanksgiving meal, tell us what you're grateful for. Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Well, joining me in the studio is David DeSteno. He's a professor of psychology at Northeastern University, and his research focuses on what he calls moral emotions. We'll talk about what that means in a minute. He's also author of Emotional Success, The Power of Gratitude, Compassion, and Pride. David DeSteno, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Meghna. Thanks for having me on.
It's great to have you. I'm going to guess that you love Thanksgiving.
I do love Thanksgiving. Yeah, it's one of the best days of the year.
It's one day that we all ideally collectively practice something that you say we should be doing all the time. So what is it about gratitude that is so important?
Yeah, and it is the one day when people tend to do it. But I think the message I want to get across to people is, don't just make it a one-off at your meal and then go and watch football. If you make this emotion a part of your daily life, it's extremely powerful. It's going to help your mind, your body, your relationships, your career, and even your wallet.
And even your wallet. Okay. So a lot to dig into there. But let's kind of start from the beginning.
Yeah.
This idea of moral emotions. What is that?
Sure. Well, we're all familiar with the idea of more kind of simple emotions, things like fear or sadness. But for humans, right, a lot of our life is revolving around social relationships. And so we have emotions that help us solve those problems, things like gratitude, which makes me pay my debts back, things like compassion, which makes me take care of other people, et cetera. And it's these emotions that undergird social behavior and support it going forward.
Okay. And so then when you say gratitude specifically, I mean, what do you mean when you say gratitude? What are we talking about?
Yeah. Gratitude is an emotion that we feel when we believe that someone or something has given us something that we couldn't easily achieve on our own. And it's there to change what we do next. I mean, people tend to think gratitude is this passive thing. Oh, somebody helped me in the past and that's great. But the reason we have any emotion is because it's designed to change what we do next, to be powerful in that way. And so what gratitude does is it reminds us that other people, our parents, our friends, our family, have helped us. And therefore, we feel that emotion and it makes us want to pay them back and to go above and beyond.
Okay. It makes us want to pay them back, meaning it sort of projects our thinking into the future rather than so much focused on the present.
Yeah. Gratitude is entirely about the future, not the past. And what it does, and we can talk about some of the research as we go on, is when you feel grateful, it makes you willing to accept sacrifices to help other people, those who have helped you, or even to pay it forward. And what's really powerful about that is, you know, people ask me all the time, Dave, you talk about moral emotions. Should I be a nice guy or not to succeed? And I say, well, what's your time frame? And the reason I say that is because in the short term, you can kind of be selfish and be a bit of a jerk and you can profit. But over time, people are going to realize that you're not a good partner to work with. You're not someone they want to have around. And what beautiful evolutionary models have shown is that over time, people who show gratitude, who cooperate, who are trustworthy, who are generous, have the best outcomes. And so feeling this emotion helps ensure that we do the right thing.
Okay. This sounds a lot like karma.
It is kind of like karma. Well, you know, I always talk about it in terms of a fancy word that economists use, which is called intertemporal choice, which basically means decisions that have different consequences as time unfolds. It all boils down to, you know, if I borrow $10 from you, Meghna, I don't pay you back. I'm ahead right now. But if I don't pay you back. You're never going to interact with me again. And people who find out that I didn't pay you back are never going to interact with me. And I'm going to lose all those benefits of future interactions I'd have over time. So it's exactly like that.
Yeah.
And these emotions push us to sacrifice in the moment, to do the right thing, to build that karma or those economic or capital or social capital or whatever resource we're talking about.
Well, so what's interesting is that you and your research, you've actually done experiments that show feeling a sense of gratitude has a measurable effect in changing our behavior.
That's right.
So can we talk about some of those experiments? I mean,
sure.
There's one that that you did where you where you got some participants and then they needed help with a computer problem.
Yeah. So one thing we do in our lab when we study human behavior is we never ask people, what would you do if? Because most people will...
They don't tell you the truth.
Well, no. I actually think some will lie and they'll say, sure, I'd help or I'd be fair, I'd be honest.
I would be a saint under all circumstances, David.
But what we know is, right, the data don't support that. But I think what's more likely happening is most people assume they would. But when push comes to shove and when there are real gains and losses on the line, they don't. And so when we study these things, we actually put them in situations where those gains and losses are on the line. I tell my students, I'm training you to be good scientists or con artists. So to make a long story short, the way the experiment works that you're talking about is we'd bring people into the lab and, you know, how do you make somebody feel grateful? So we have them doing this computer program, which is really boring. It was designed to be incredibly boring and onerous. And after they're done, just when they're ready to record their score, the computer's rigged so that it looks like it crashes. And they're not really happy about this. And the experimenter comes in and says, I'm sorry, you're going to have to do this all over.
Oh,
well,
dear.
At that point, right, we have somebody else in there who's an actor who works for us, but who the subjects believe is another subject in the research. And he comes over and he says, you know what? That's terrible. Let me see if I can help you with this. And through some, you know, shenanigans, he hits a key surreptitiously and the computer comes back on. Everybody's like, oh, thank you so much. And so they feel grateful.
So he comes – this person comes in unasked and just offers assistance.
Just offers assistance.
Okay.
Yeah. And then they leave. And then on their way out of the building, they're either confronted by the same person who was in the lab with them or by someone else. And they say, you know, I'm doing this work study – research for my professor. I've got these other types of projects I need done. Could you help me out? If you work on these, I know they're long and hard, but the more you do, the more it'll help me. And if they say yes, we let them just go into a room and do it. This way nobody's watching them, so there's no pressure. They can leave whenever they want. And what you find is that people who are feeling grateful will spend a lot more time working to help this person. Now, you might say, that's not that interesting, Dave, because, you know, they might feel like they owe him. This person just...
Yeah, I was wondering if it's like a transactional thing.
Right. It is. And so how do you separate that and know it's actually gratitude? Well, even when a stranger asks them, someone they've never met, right, they'll do the same thing. They'll work longer and harder to help this person. And how long they work is predicted by the intensity of gratitude they felt at the time when that person helped them.
Oh, and it's predicted fairly strongly?
Predicted fairly strongly in kind of a dose-dependent way. So we really know that it's the intensity of gratitude they're feeling. And we've done it with trustworthy behaviors and all kinds of helping behaviors. And, you know, the idea here is when you're afraid, right, and you enter a situation – that fear is a signal to you that something dangerous is likely to happen, and so you're kind of on guard.
Yeah.
Well, when you're feeling grateful, it's a signal to you that someone has helped you and that you should pay this person back. But even if somebody else asks you, when you feel that emotion, it means, yes, you should sacrifice to help someone else. And so you will, and you'll pay it forward. And the reason, again, why you do that is because in the long run, people who accept those sacrifices in the moment to help others build relationships that, in the end, lead everybody to win, that raise all boats.
So this seems to then be quite important for on a civilizational level, if I might say.
Yeah.
Or at least a societal level, because, I mean, we are social creatures, right?
We are.
One of my favorite conversations I had years ago was with E.O. Wilson, who was talking about pro-social animals, right?
That's right.
So this idea that, I mean, even though we like to think that we're very individualistic, our survival depends on each other. And if we're more likely to help each other, I mean, is there something kind of deeply evolutionary then about
there
the
is.
Sense of gratitude?
Yeah, this work comes out of some of the ideas of Martin Novak, who's an evolutionary biologist at Harvard, who has run these beautiful simulations where he shows, as I was saying, that over time, individuals who are cooperative, who are trustworthy, have the best gains in a very evolutionary sense. So we're not saying be selfless in the sense that, you know, the selfish gene doesn't matter. When you sacrifice to help other people, you're actually ensuring that when you need help down the line, they're going to cooperate with you. And so it's actually benefiting you yourself. I don't want to get into the whole pure altruism debate, but it does benefit individuals. And so it is deeply evolutionary. And these emotions push us to accept those sacrifices. You know, one thing we've shown is the human mind has this glitch where it kind of wants immediate gratification, right? It discounts rewards in the future for rewards in the present. The most famous example is Walter Mischel's marshmallow test.
Oh, the marshmallow test, of course.
the kids who gobbled the first marshmallow didn't have as great outcomes over time as the kids who could wait.
But to be fair, people looking at those tests said that there wasn't, the original test didn't necessarily control for the other factors in the kids' lives.
It didn't control for other factors, but it is replicable, but it also is modified by kids' socioeconomic standards. Yeah. But, you know, that makes perfect sense, too, because if you believe that your efforts aren't going to pay dividends, then why would you wait?
Right.
But in general, we've seen it in lots of areas, in credit card debt, in exercise, in disease, this short-term, long-term trade-off works. And what we've shown is when you feel grateful or you feel compassion, these moral emotions, it attenuates how much people discount the future. It makes you value the future more than you normally would, which gives you patience and makes you more willing to sacrifice to help others, but importantly, to sacrifice to help your own future self as well.
Wow. You know, we've got some hard-bitten cynics in the On Point listening community, and I'm grateful for them too. But
sure.
Thomas Lang sent us a comment on the website saying, perhaps we're happier because an unexpected something happy occurred in our lives, and artificially imposing a happier expression onto something like the death of a close friend or relation seems more like spin doctoring a corpse.
Well, that's a good question, and it's one that we took seriously because when we wanted to show that gratitude mattered, we had to show that it's not just feeling good or not just feeling happy.
Okay, so when we come back, you can tell me more about how you showed that. We're talking with David DeSteno this hour. He's a professor of psychology at Northeastern University. His research focuses on moral emotions, and he's the author of Emotional Success, The Power of Gratitude, Compassion, and Pride. And I want to hear from you. Do you actively practice communicating gratitude and for paying things forward, as David said? And how does that factor not into how you're living tomorrow, but your entire life? I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking this hour with David DeSteno. He's author of Emotional Success, The Power of Gratitude, Compassion, and Pride. And of course, since this is Thanksgiving Eve, I just want to play a moment from a classic. This is 1973 Charlie Brown Thanksgiving. You've all seen it. Charlie Brown has invited his friends over for a Thanksgiving meal consisting of toast and popcorn and pretzels, and Peppermint Patty really complains, saying, "Where's the turkey? Where's the cranberry sauce?" And then Marcy consoles Charlie Brown and saying the holiday isn't just about the food, it's about gratitude.
"Don't feel bad, Chuck. Peppermint Patty didn't mean all those things she said. Actually, she really likes you."
"I don't feel bad for myself. I just feel bad because I ruined everyone's Thanksgiving."
"But Thanksgiving is more than eating, Chuck. Those early pilgrims were thankful for what had happened to them. And we should be thankful, too. We should just be thankful for being together."
That's from 1973. David DeSteno, let's get back to the present here. You were talking before we had to take a quick break about how we can actually measure whether or not people are just feeling better.
Sure.
when we're talking about the research that you've done on gratitude.
Yeah, that is a beautiful segment from Charlie Brown. And I want to get back to that in a bit because it really is about the relationships. But to answer that question that came up, we would run similar conditions in our research where we made people feel happy, either by giving them something or having them watch something that made them feel happy. Happy and amused and laugh out loud. And that didn't make them more willing to sacrifice to help others. It didn't make them more patient. It didn't affect their trustworthiness. And the reason why is if you feel happy, most people, what you want to do is to maintain that feeling. You don't want to do anything that's going to bring you down. And sometimes sacrifice will. And so there's a big distinction in terms of how gratitude and happiness affect people's behaviors, showing us that it's not just feeling good. It's those special emotions that are really tied to the give and take of human social life, like gratitude and compassion.
Okay. Well, so about what Marcy told Charlie Brown then, about we should be thankful for being together?
Yeah. I mean, you know, the interesting thing is I often listen to David Brooks talking about, he laments that there's a difference between what he calls our resume virtues and our eulogy virtues, right? The resume ones are things that we need to get ahead in life so that we can buy better things, like a better turkey for Charlie Brown. Nose to the grindstone, willpower, et cetera. And then there are these eulogy virtues, things that we want to be remembered for: kindness, generosity, fairness. And the way we live our lives now, these things seem separate. But for millennia, they weren't. What guaranteed success for millennia for humans was having good character. You had to be trustworthy. You had to be honest. You had to be fair. Those were what made people want to cooperate with you, and that's what led us to be successful. Now, if you have enough money, you can kind of be successful and be a jerk on your own. But if you practice these emotions daily, not only are they going to give you the patience and the self-control and motivation to pursue goals, they're going to bind you to other people. They're going to make you act in ways that draw others to you. I like to say practicing gratitude gives us grit and grace.
Right.
And that is important to our well-being. There's a great study by a guy named Todd Kashtan from George Mason University, where he looked at, you know, being in college these days is incredibly anxiety-provoking. I think you had a story recently about the anxiety people are feeling. And what he found is that they're looking at kids who had this idea of grit, right, this idea of working hard.
It's something that's being actively taught in schools.
Something being actively taught in schools. And what we're doing by asking people to work harder and use executive function and willpower and plan, when you're stressed, that becomes much harder to use. And it's kind of self-defeating. And so this anxiety is going up. And what his work found is that, you know, grit wasn't a protector against anxiety or even suicidal ideation. But those who also practice gratitude buffered anxiety, buffered suicidal ideation, gave them the resilience so that they could perform. And so one of my arguments is, you know, we are teaching our children to go about success in the wrong way. If you practice these emotions, they make you value the future. They make you want to sacrifice. You know, when I think of grit, I don't think of the CEO who works, you know, crazy hours, or the violinist who practices crazy hours. I think of like the single mom who's working two or three jobs to put her kid through school, or the grandparent with emphysema who's dragging the oxygen tank behind him to see his daughter's first theatrical performance, his granddaughter's first theatrical performance. That's real grit. And what pushes us to do that are emotions like gratitude and compassion we feel for people.
Right. Do you know what, though? It seems somewhat ironic, though, that in already in this conversation, we're talking about gratitude as being this pro-social emotion that connects us more profoundly to our fellow human beings. So that's like kind of good for a human society. But we're trying to sell it in terms of, this is why it's also good for us. Right? It makes you more gritty. It could make you more successful. It helps you delay gratification, which, I mean, you said earlier, that's good for your mental health. It could be good for your physical health. Good for your own wallet. Approaching it from an incredibly selfish, individualistic perspective, aren't we?
It is, but that's part of, in some ways, that's part of the marketing for people. So I have a friend, Ming Tan, who developed Google's meditation program. And he said, the way I sold it to them is, yes, not only is it going to make the employees happier, but it's going to increase their productivity for the bottom line. And so my argument is, you know, there's nothing wrong with wanting to succeed, but it's how we succeed. And if together we win and everybody else wins at the same time, I'm okay with that. That's the way it should be. And, you know, some of our biggest problems in society right now are that we're short-sighted. You know, you've heard the thing. All the Congress people say, yes, this is a problem, but I don't want to deal with it now because it's going to hurt my election. Right? It's not in my term of office. I don't want to deal with this. So they kick the can. Well, the problem with a lot of things, we're talking climate change or infrastructure or any of these things that are plaguing us, is nobody's willing to make the sacrifice to pay for cleaner energy, to pay for infrastructure, whatever it may be, to balance the budget now. Everybody wants their tax cut with immediate gratification. But the hard part about
it is, maybe they need it.
For
some people,
no,
they need that.
This is true, right? So I'm saying when it's not a matter of survival. When it's a matter of survival, you do what you need. we have to basically be willing to use less energy or pay more for cleaner energy. But doing that requires you not only to be sacrifice in your own half, but you have to do one other thing. You have to believe that your neighbors are doing the same, because nobody wants to be the sucker, right?
Yeah. So can I read you a comment that we got here? And then I promise, we have so many callers. I promise you, callers, I will get to you. But look, we had, oh, well, here it is. So many comments. I get a lot of paper here. Someone named Toyota said that kind of almost disagrees with what you're saying, saying gratitude often leads to complacency. And for Toyota, it leads to anger. I can't tell you how many times I've been told throughout my career, thank God you're here to think about this hard problem, because they'll take the heroic share and of work to get the darn project done. So, you know.
Yeah, well,
Toyota being the sucker in all of this.
Yeah. I mean, so, you know, when people are saying, thank you for being here, it's, you know, that's, they're kind of pushing something onto you. And in that sense, it's, gratitude can be used to make people complacent. But I don't think that's its real purpose, right? What we show in our work is when you feel grateful, people are more willing to behave in a cooperative and trustworthy manner toward others and to believe that they'll do the same. And so what that means is you're willing to sacrifice to save energy or pay more for cleaner energy, and you'll believe others will too. Now, if you're the only one, it's true, you're the sucker. But if we can, as a society, increase the general level of gratitude we're all feeling, then it's going to make us trust each other and walk the walk.
Okay. Hold that thought. I want to come back to that, because my big question is, how do we do that? But let's go to some callers here. Mike is calling from Detroit, Michigan. Mike, you're on the air.
Hi. How are you guys doing today?
Very well. What's your thought?
Hi, I just wanted to mention briefly. When I was growing up, I was a terribly weak kid. I was a weak kid in class. I didn't have much going for me, things like that. And I felt like I was always bullied. But I found gratitude in some incredible people, and they had been like role models to me. And eventually, I built myself up. I became better physically, mentally, and emotionally. And eventually, I enlisted in the Air Force, and then this past year has been incredible for me. I got to go on a humanitarian mission to Puerto Rico, and through a stroke of fate, I pushed off another semester of schooling to become a firefighter.
Mm-hmm.
And it's this drive of gratitude that I kind of feel like I need to continuously pay it forward, not only the people who helped me, but to the rest of everyone. And because I went from this position of being helpless and being weak, and then now I am able to do so much with my life. And
yeah,
my main advice I'd like to give to everyone is the way I think nowadays is, be the kind of person that your childhood self would always want to turn to in a time of need.
Right. Well, Mike, thank you so much for your call. Dave DeStena, what do you hear? Mike's whole life, it seems, has been now strongly shaped by this.
Yeah, I think Mike's discovered something important, which is kind of the way we started this conversation, where I said gratitude is a powerful emotion. A colleague of mine, Bob Frank, who's an economist at Cornell, had this book out not too long ago called Success and Luck, where he makes the argument that, yes, hard work is important and individual ability is important, but in one way or another, all of us have probably benefited from the help of others along the way, and it's important to recognize that. And I think what our caller is showing is that when he makes gratitude part of his life, it makes him be willing to kind of pay it forward, to reach out, to help others, and then he's seeing the benefit of that coming back from all directions. And that's the kind of network that we need to succeed in life. It's really difficult to do it on your own. And emotionally, it's almost impossible.
Well, let's get right to one thing that you also said at the beginning of the conversation, because we've been talking about sort of the emotional and mental health benefits of gratitude. But you also said it could be good for your wallet.
It's good for your wallet. Yeah, in a couple ways.
How?
Yeah. One is, so, you know, we were doing these economic tasks where we were measuring people's investment choices. And what we found is that when people were feeling grateful, they were willing to invest money for future gain more than take money and run with it to kind of buy the newest iPhone or whatever else they might want. And so if you extrapolate that up, what it shows is that when you are feeling grateful more regularly in life, you're more willing to take whatever resources you have, again, assuming you don't need them to live right in the moment. I'm not advocating that. But if you have ample resources and you have a choice between spending them on an impulse buy, given that Black Friday is coming, or putting them away for savings for some future goal, when people are feeling grateful, not when they're feeling happy or anything else, but when they're feeling grateful, they will invest it in that way.
Okay. Let's go to another caller here. I actually would like to go, if possible, I'd like to go to Edith, who's calling from Canton, Connecticut. Edith, you're on the air, and I think you've got a question that I also want to know the answer to. So go ahead, Edith.
Okay. My theory is a little different. I feel compassion and gratitude comes with one as they age and perhaps have reaped the benefit of wonderful parents who instilled or made it possible for them to have a profession and to grow up with good values. And my feeling is it's something that grows with age, whether you've been lucky to have good health and good family mm-hmm. and all good things. And also for those who have been through a traumatic situation where they are very grateful to be here.
Right. So the very fact of your life experience as you get older, right?
Experience, it, to me, is where it comes from. I'm not sure it can be taught, but, you know, perhaps it can in small ways. But I don't think there's anything like coming to it yourself, because it's very real.
Right. Well, Edith, thank you so much for your call. David DeSteno, Edith has hit exactly on something. I'll just use myself as an example. Apologies. I felt like in my 20s, this does not say good things about me, to be perfectly honest. But, you know, I was pretty focused on myself, pretty solipsistic, just had my goals in life and was going to go and get them. Mm-hmm. I am not in my 20s anymore.
Neither am I.
I'm considerably past that. And perhaps it's because, maybe it's because I'm lucky enough to have, with the help of many others, achieved a lot of what my goals were. But also I think I just, having lived much longer, as Edith said, just like the experience of being alive and having seen the effects of other, the positive effects of others on me, I'm more capable of observing the influence of people on me, and therefore more conscious of my feelings of gratitude towards them. Mm-hmm. I'm not even sure my 22-year-old brain would be capable of that. Look, I'm not saying that I have like some sort of brain problem, but is she on to something capable of this as we get older?
I don't know that we're more capable of it, but there certainly is a correlation between age and gratitude. That is, as people grow older, they do experience it more. I think it's for a lot of the reasons that both you and Edith have said. You come to appreciate what others did for you in your life. You realize both in yourself and others how it could have turned out very differently, and you become much more cognizant of those things. And I think it's also, as you grow older, you just reflect more on what's come before, and so you do feel grateful. And also, to her point on trauma, there is evidence that people who have gone through trauma and come out of it successfully actually are show much more compassion in these moral emotions as they go on to help other people because they've been there. But one thing, Edith, I think hopefully you'll take comfort in this, that actually is teachable. I mean, there's data right now that shows that on average, you know, they measure college students every year, gratitude and empathy and compassion are all going down, and they've been going down for a long time. And we could probably spend a whole other show on why that is, if anybody truly knows. But it is teachable. There's great work showing that it can be taught to children and that the effects are lasting, and it changes their behaviors and their interactions. I just think right now, with all our focus, as Meghna said, on these academic skills and teaching kids how to, you know, pass standardized tests, we're losing this kind of character side of skills that are important
for
life.
So give me a concrete example, though. How do we teach gratitude?
Yeah. So there are a few strategies. One strategy that I recommend is probably one people know, which is simply gratitude journaling, right? That is, every couple of days, stop and reflect on things that you're grateful for. Now, the trick is, right, we all have the three things in life that we're incredibly grateful for. If you think about those three things every day, they're going to lose their power. You're going to just habituate to them. But But think about, you know, did someone stop and give you directions today? Did someone give you a seat on the bus? Did someone just show you some type of kindness? And what we find in our work is those types of gratitude reflections produce the same behavioral effects as thinking of the thing that your parents did for you that changed the course of your life. And so stop and reflect on those. Another thing that I recommend for families or for work groups, if you're a manager trying to instill it among your work team, and we didn't create this, this has been around for a long time, is called the reciprocity ring. And what that is that everybody takes a post-it note and you write on it something that you need help with and you put it up on a board. And then everybody has to then take another post-it note, write their name on it, and put it next to the thing they're going to help with. And I'll tell you what happens next when we come back.
All right. Well, we'll take a quick break here. David DeSteno is with us and we're talking about gratitude, its importance, and how it can change our lives. We'll be right back. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point. This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking this hour with David DeSteno. He's a professor of psychology at Northeastern University and author of Emotional Success, The Power of Gratitude, Compassion, and Pride. And we're spending this hour talking about gratitude in particular. So David, before the break, you were telling us about a reciprocity circle that
reciprocity ring. Exactly. Business or your family, it works great on your fridge. So again, just to remind you, everybody takes a post-it note, writes on it something that they need help with. Then everybody takes a different color post-it note, puts their name on it, and puts it next to the thing they want to help somebody with. And then what you do is draw lines between your post-it that says what you want help with and your post-it that shows you're willing to help somebody else. And what you'll see is a lot of crossing lines. And what it begins to show is this interconnected net structure that supports the whole group. And then, of course, what you do is you do the thing. You help the person who you said you're going to help. And this does two things. One, it makes people willing. It changes the culture in the family or their work group so that it's okay to ask for help. One of the biggest problems is people feel weak when they're asking for help. We all need help. And if you are willing to admit it and ask for it, it's a very empowering experience for someone else to be able to do that. And it's rewarding when you actually help someone else or give something to someone else. It activates reward centers in your brain, right? It's pleasurable. You like it. And it makes other people feel grateful. And so, one, it changes the culture. But two, I now feel grateful because you helped me with something. And when I feel grateful, I'm going to then pay it either back to you or forward to someone else. And it becomes a reinforcing circle of reciprocal relationships. And there's lots of great work out there showing that, you know, it helps psychological well-being. But again, also the bottom line, there's great work by Adam Grant from Wharton that shows in work groups, they did it in call centers, talk about a thankless job. You're trying to call people and ask for money. When the managers show gratitude for people's efforts, not only are those people happier, but they work harder and they succeed more.
Mm-hmm. Well, you mentioned earlier about ways to sort of cultivate and practice growing the sense of gratitude in yourself. You mentioned gratitude journals, just writing down every day or a couple times a week, five things that you feel grateful for?
It can be one thing a day, just as long as you focus on it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, some very high-profile, very successful people do this. Mm-hmm. I mean, we found a clip from 1997 where Oprah Winfrey kicked off the new year by reading entries from her gratitude journal. And then she turned and asked the audience what they were thankful for. And here's that moment.
What was yours?
Being able to put windshield wiper fluid in my car when I had ran out in snow.
That's good. Yes, ma'am?
Oh, dancing to Miles Davis, just putting on a CD and just going for it.
By yourself?
By myself.
Don't you love those parties for one?
Yes.
I love those. Yes, ma'am?
Having my boss tell me that we think alike.
Oh, good.
It's kind of scary.
That was a moment. Yes?
Good fresh coffee. Just very simple. Something to be thankful for.
That's Oprah Winfrey and members of her audience back in 1997 talking about things they were grateful for. On this note about gratitude journals, let's turn to Sherry, who's calling from Buffalo, New York. And Sherry, do you keep a gratitude journal?
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Yes, I do. I have a journal that I've titled Five a Day to Keep the Blues Away. And I try to put in there things that I'm grateful for, even the little things, because, I mean, he's made it great points, but I think the interchange starts with yourself. And I try to even be grateful for water or fresh air or the flowers growing. And sometimes, if I had a really rough day, I'm grateful that I made it to that day.
Yeah.
Or if I had a troubling relationship or problem with somebody, I'm grateful for the opportunity to learn more patience. So it really helps lift my mood and my attitude when I begin with myself, and it helps me then to turn more outward to others.
Right. Well, Sherry, thank you so much for your call. Let's go to Pam, who's calling from Wellesley, Massachusetts. Pam, do you see when you practice gratitude or feel gratitude, that similar change in mood as Sherry was talking about?
Yes, Meghna. First of all, hello to you and David. And I am very grateful for this piece you're doing on gratitude. I come from a long line of mental illness, specifically depression and suicide. And I'm always struggling with it myself. And I try to stay off of SSRI medication. And I find that gratitude is huge. If I express gratitude for the simplest things, like turning on the faucet and having really clear, beautiful running water come out that's not contaminated, that I can drink and brush my teeth with, I am much more likely to not be depressed or feel bad about myself or the day. And it could be anything. And I do start the day that way, too. I actually meditate, and I start my meditation with gratitude prayers.
Wow.
And so I just can't stress it enough on every level, from the simplest thing. I call it gratitude 101. You know, looking out and being able to say, I can breathe this air, and it's making me feel good.
Yeah. That Pam, really, let me just jump in here, and I'm sorry to, I really, forgive me for interrupting you, but I want to get David DeSanto's thoughts on this, and thank you for your call, Pam. Two callers there talking about, like, the positive mental health benefits they're feeling from just practicing gratitude.
Yeah, and the data are really clear. People who practice gratitude more, experience it more regularly, have less anxiety, less depression. Even among individuals who aren't suffering with any type of psychological pathology or disorder, they just feel better. They feel more connected. They value their relationships more, whether it's friends or whether it's spouses. But the one thing I wanted to point out, both your callers were pointing out, you know, be thankful for these little things.
Mm-hmm.
It shows how much we're interconnected. You know, the coffee that we're getting, how do we get that coffee? Where does it come from? It's cooperation with people across the globe. Miles Davis, I can hear him because someone recorded that. And, you know, we humans have always lived in interconnected groups, but now we're doing this on a grander, more global scale than we've ever done before. And I think that's why it's important not to lose sight of these emotions, because these are the emotions that helps us support it when we all lived sharing that same common pasture. We had to be grateful for not overgrazing it so we could all have a resource. We've got to think about that at much larger levels.
So does being thankful, even for these little things, mm-hmm. seemingly trifling things, does it make us better capable of dealing with the very large negative things that we have to face?
Yeah.
Because I don't want to come off as being naive. Like, life will be great if I, you know, say thankful for this flower growing or thankful that my pen works today.
Yeah. It's not a magic bullet. It's not going to change everything in your life. But what it does is it begins to reset the way your mind interprets what's around you. That is, if you feel grateful, it makes you more willing to be patient, to reach out, to sacrifice, to help others, to pay it forward. And that, in very rapid succession, makes others willing to do the same for you, which helps you. It also lowers your anxiety, which in terms of making decisions around you helps you to be a little more thoughtful. It's not going to change everything in your life all at once. But again, if more and more people practice it, it's going to cause more and more people to pay it forward, to support each other, and to deal with those issues. And so my argument is, yes, we each need to do it, but we also need to be thinking about this on a larger scale.
So, okay, about this issue, about the societal level impacts, if we mm-hmm. all, on a day-to-day basis, collectively feel more gratitude. I mean, I've been seeing research here that shows that we're somewhat hardwired to even be able to recognize gestures of gratitude. There was Matthew Hertenstein a while ago, mm-hmm. did some research where he and his research partner put a barrier, physical barrier, between two people, and had one person put their arm across the barrier. And they found that human beings were really good at recognizing gestures of touch that were meant in gratitude,
mm-hmm.
which is fascinating to me. So we're kind of hardwired for this. But it seems to me, though, right now, that in life, in American life, there are a lot of forces in opposition to feeling gratitude.
Yeah.
The state of our, you know, our politics, our political language, you know, maybe even everything that we see in the media and hear in the media all the time. The short-term decision-making basis of a lot of business in this country. It just, you know, it seems like we're kind of primed to approach things, not everybody, because I know people are saying not me, but like not everybody, but primed approach things of saying like, well, this is mine. I got to protect mine. And I'm not necessarily feeling grateful and therefore paying it forward.
No, that's true. I mean, I think in many ways that's the problem we're facing as a society. Everybody wants immediate gratification. Everybody kind of wants to kind of protect themselves because they feel vulnerable.
Yes, because they feel like if they don't have that immediate gratification, they may not experience it later on.
Right.
Right?
And that's and that's certainly true. You have to believe at some level that what you're doing, the sacrifices you're making, whether you're saving money for yourself to buy something, whether you're exercising so that, and you know, whether you're resisting eating the second piece of pumpkin pie so that 2 months from now you'll fit into your clothes, you have to believe that those efforts will pay off in the long run.
Can I just give you a specific political example?
Yeah.
I mean, keeping immigrants out because they may be taking the resources that someone's children might deserve more later on. That's a sharp example.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, I'm trying to say like how does culturing a sense of gratitude have an effect on folks who look at immigration that way?
What any emotion does is it changes the moment-to-moment calculations your brain is making. And so when you're deciding, should I support a policy that wants to keep immigrants out, or should I support a policy that gives me something at the expense of someone else? A lot of those calculations are going on below your conscious awareness. And what we know when you feel an emotion is it alters that. When you feel gratitude, what we know is that it makes you more willing to share. It makes you more willing to cooperate. It makes you more willing to see other people as trustworthy and valuable of interacting and worthy of interacting with. And so is it going to automatically change the, you know, for somebody who's very hardened in their opinions about this? Not immediately. Over time, it may. For those people who are kind of on the fence, it may. Why does the president always try and stoke fear? Why does he say these things, you know, these people are disgusting? What those emotions do is make us withdraw.
Mm-hmm.
And so for people who might be on the fence and think, oh, I don't know how I feel about this, if he stokes anger or disgust or fear in you, that's enough to push you over. Cultivating gratitude will push you the other way. It makes you more willing to cooperate, to trust. And, you know, I mean, there for the grace of God go I for a lot of people, and you've got to remember that.
Right. Well, actually, on that point, let me take a caller here. Nora is calling from Cranston, Rhode Island. Nora, you're on the air.
Oh, wow. Thank you so much. I wasn't sure I'd get through. So my question is, I practice gratitude every day. Like, I write something, small thing for the day, but I'm having a long-term struggle, which I won't get into. And I think one of the difficulties that I struggle with is that I do that, you know, and I teach it to my child. But sometimes it doesn't feel like enough because it's going to be a long struggle. It's an economic struggle, and it's going to be a long-term struggle. And I just wanted to know if you had any advice on how to, if you already practice gratitude and sometimes it feels like it's not doing it for you because, like, how do you advise that we manage that?
Mm-hmm. Nora, thank you for your call. David, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, please don't take from this discussion that I think gratitude is the magic bullet. Life is hard. Life is complex. But I think this is one of the tools that we have in our arsenal that we are, as individuals and as a society, neglecting. And if we work to cultivate it in ourselves and in other people, it will help us all. It will help our own health. It will help our own outcomes, and it will help us treat others in ways that reinforce relationships. And so my advice to you is if you want to work in terms of gratitude, is be the first sometimes to pay it forward. Sometimes don't worry about feeling gratitude yourself, but do something that will lead somebody else to feel grateful to you, because odds are then they're going to pay it back and intensify your gratitude down the line.
Hmm. Well, let's go to Kathy, who's calling from North Royalton, Ohio. Kathy, you're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to mention that I think gratitude grows like seeds. You're planting seeds when you're being grateful to someone, and they then have that opportunity to grow that seed as well. And, you know, someone just before me talked about their children. I have grandchildren, and when they're very sad or things don't go their way, I ask them what they can be grateful for. What are they happy about today? What's the best thing that happened? And teach them gratitude that way. And I think it's so important in the world we live in to teach each other gratitude.
Yeah.
By being grateful.
Well, Kathy, thank you for your call. I love her analogy that it grows like a seed. Do we see evidence of that?
We do. I mean, gratitude leads people to pay it forward. So in our studies, when people are grateful, let's say if Meghna helps me, I'm grateful to Meghna, I will then go out in my world and help multiple other people, which then makes those people feel grateful to me, and therefore they will then pay it back to someone else. And I think the seed analogy is perfect. But I think you're absolutely right. We need to teach this in a way that, I mean, my looking back on previous generations where that there was a little bit more concern for these kind of moral character traits than there is now. And I think we are sacrificing our individual well-being and our societal well-being by not teaching these, right?
Yeah.
They sustain us. They build those relationships that help us in the hardest times of our lives.
I have one last question for you. I try to resist looking back on the past with rose-colored glasses or too rosy glasses. I mean, haven't we always had examples, though, of people who do get ahead by being selfish, who do get ahead and never feel grateful about it? And, I mean, the history's rife with them. So.
We do, but how do you feel about those people?
Fair question. I am not a fan of those people.
And so if you have some power over people, if you have higher status or money or elected office, other people will treat you well because they have to. But when you're no longer in that position, that all goes away. And so if you want a more balanced success, a more resilient success, one that you feel good about, do it by practicing gratitude and being fair and being trustworthy.
Well, David DeStenno, it gives me a great deal of pleasure to tell you that I'm so grateful that you came in today on this day before Thanksgiving to talk with us about gratitude. Thank you so very much.
Thank you.
David DeStenno is a professor of psychology at Northeastern University, and his book is Emotional Success, The Power of Gratitude. And since I'm sharing my thanks, I want to say thank you to my friends and my family. Without them, I would not be the person I am today. They're my everything, and I feel so grateful for the numbers of people that I've been fortunate to love and be loved by. And I'd also like to say thank you to our incredible staff here at On Point. They are so brilliant and so hardworking. They are the reason why this show, hopefully, you think is as good as it is. So let me tell you who they are. They are Anna Bauman, Brian Hardzinski, Eileen Amada, Stefano Katsonis, Allison Poli, James Ross, Alex Schroeder, and Miriam Wasser. Madeline D'Angelo and Lexi Peary help us out as well. Our executive producer is Karen Schiffman. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Have a very happy Thanksgiving, everyone. This is On Point.